Hey, this is the Punk News Podcast, number 736. I think that's what it is because I don't keep count. This is Sam Barrett. I am driving today. This podcast, that is, not physically because I don't drive really. But I am joined here with my delightful alien friend, John G. Are you
I
out in
made it on
space?
time. Here I am on time this time.
You are on time. Are you on a spaceship? That's the question.
I might be on a spaceship that is classified information that I can't reveal to you at this time.
Well, that's also good to hear that you're alive. And we are here with M Moore. M,
Hey.
oh, hold up. Sam did a crazy thing and ended up in Canada somehow. And ended up
Hell yeah.
finding M. Moore on the streets.
You
And
found them on the streets?
yes, we found her on the streets
My natural habitat.
yeah, natural
Yeah.
habitat. And we ended up getting well, I got some hot dogs, which questionable hot dogs, still good. So if you've been a longtime listener of the podcast, I think you've heard about me and M talking about some American dog or USA dog, somewhere out
Oh
in
yeah.
Toronto at this place called Grandma Loves You. Well,
Great place.
yeah, Sam had to go up to Toronto to try this hot dog because why not send an American up to Canada to try a hot dog? So this hot dog had pickles in it and mustard and ketchup and kind of cooked pepperonis on it. I would have to say it was a very odd thing to put more meat on top of a meat hot dog. It was actually qu quite crazy. That was so Sam likes hot dogs a lot and eats quite a number of hot dogs and has her favorite brands. Sitting there eating this hot dog, shape and all, pinpointed it and akin it to a Costco hot dog with other stuff on it. Yes, Em was there to witness my realization of such thing.
Yes.
And then
Sam, what's the best hot dog brand? You said you have favorites. What's the best hot dog brand?
I love a good Nathan's. I am a Nathan's girl. And this has nothing to do because I live in Brooklyn, you guys. Natural casing and all. But yeah, I do also do like a Costco hot dog. There is a Costco hot dog has a really good ratio of bread to meat if you buy it at Costco, plus it's what, $1.99? Cheap eats, sure. Anyways. Yeah, I would rate it a good 8 for a hot dog, in a Sam scale of hot dog ratings. So go try out this hot dog. Yeah, I also got like a Italy hot dog that had pesto on it. That was a
In
lot.
Italy or in
No,
Canada?
in Canada, because this
Yeah,
place
that sounds
also had like a
gross.
French hot dog and an Italian.
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't know what's up with this place and like naming hot dogs out of like countries, but whatever. I don't know.
Fun.
Maybe they're really into the World Cup. Who knows? But yeah. So we are actually here and with a special guest, and this person is going to be interviewed shortly. So let me play a song by them. It is Scarbro. So sure we have here. And he's in the band Scarbro. So we're gonna play Hate Season. welcome and thanks for showing up to the podcast.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. Stoked to be here.
Well, you actually have not been a, I guess, a stranger to Punk News. You've actually been on a couple things that I've done on Punk News.
Yes.
Although the other things that I've done with you on Punk News was more political.
Yeah, we did an interview when I ran for Congress, and then you've run a bunch of our stuff that we've premiered over the years, so eternally grateful.
Yes, but so you guys, your band actually put out a record recently. I think it's April. It's
Yep.
actually called Hate Season. We pretty much played the title track right now. For me, being a native New Yorker, you guys have kind of been a staple in the New York City scene for a really long time, over 10 years. Like, I've heard about your band before I even saw your band. For a really long time. So you pretty much like released your first LP like almost 10 years ago, about maybe nine,
Yeah,
something like that.
9 years. It goes by fast. Yeah,
And like a whole bunch of like EPs and just singles and stuff like that. So Hate Season. One, how does this album fit into the catalog that you have existing?
I mean, it's definitely, I think, a bit of an evolution for us. We brought on a new drummer in 2023 when we came out of hiatus. Radhika, and she has a really diverse musical background. She didn't come up, she's originally from India. Like, she's not from like the quote unquote punk scene traditionally. And so like she brought in a lot of new influences in for us, and really kind of reshaped a little bit of what we were doing. I think it's this record in particular is one that we're very proud of, because there was a point, during that hiatus where we didn't even know if we'd ever like come back and do music again. So, when we did get it going again and started working on this record, like we really wanted to, push ourselves and make sure that we weren't just repeating everything we'd done before and really capitalizing on, having Radhika in the band who had some interesting insights and stuff to really kind of play outside of the box for once.
Awesome. So like tell me about like the recording process of this album. Like was it like years and years and years of just like, well, since hiatus, like making it, or like
Yeah,
was
no, so
it old songs?
yeah, no. When we brought Radhika on board, we knocked out like two singles. And at that point, that's when I had sort of left like my political life behind. Like I was working at the state senate at the time, and just kind of got fed up with all the BS that's going on, and so it was like, you know what, I'm gonna go back and do Scarborough full time this time. So once we had those singles out, like the writing process for this was all in that sort of period. So at this point, like by the time it released, it'd been kind of a 2 year process, like just kind of all the songs that were written for it, a few that didn't, never made it even to the rehearsal space that are just kind of sitting on my phone still. So who knows? Maybe there's another EP sitting around there somewhere. And then, we like to, we're not one of those bands that kind of like hides the new songs. We really like to kind of test them out and see what they're like live. And that really, I think, helps guide a little bit of what you want to do once you're in the studio, just because you get a better feel for it that way. And I would say that this was a process that's probably longer than we'd ever done before. I mean, I think it took us a good like 4 months of on and off recording and fine tuning before we were done with it. But it's also one of the ones that's probably the most collaborative that we've ever done. When we were in the studio, really working with Brian, who was producing the record with us, and just making sure that everybody's sort of pieces were in there that they wanted to do, and kind of changing the songs along the way a little bit, just so that we can get them a little bit tighter and a little bit more dynamic. So yeah, that was the process of Hate Season.
Awesome. I've actually seen you guys like live a couple times, and you guys always like make sure that your set list is very diverse. Like you go from like really old songs to like super new songs. I was like, you guys are always surprising me. Just saying.
Thank you. That's what we aim for.
Awesome. Okay, so you like you said before, I was like, you guys have been was inactive for a period of time, and during that period of time, you're kind of doing your own thing, you know, into the politics and stuff like that. So how has the hiatus lead to some of the lyrical content that went into Hate Season?
Ooh, yeah, no, that's a great question. Because a lot of it really did, in that period. Songs like, Chaser really come out of that experience, sort of being in both worlds, like you go to so many punk shows or hardcore shows, and you get a lot of preaching from the bands, you get a lot of preaching online. And then when I was actually, and I work for a leftist candidate, so it's like a lot of the issues we care about are interlocked there. But then, those voices never showed up, when we were actually trying to do the work and trying to do all that stuff. And so, a song like Chaser was heavily inspired by that, which is, it is kind of a little bit of a call out of, we do such a great job of the hot takes and saying the things and, causing so much bullshit online. But then when it actually comes to putting in the work to actually, do the things that we're allegedly fighting for, there's no one to be seen. Then we have a song like Turn It Up, which, I spent all of that time not being able to write music, and so much of my time was consumed by, the work and bullshit of trying to get stuff done in a landscape that is very hostile towards sort of the issues and causes we care about, and there was no time for the music. And when I finally had the opportunity to step away from all of that and pick up the guitar again and be able to start writing Scarborough songs again, it was really like, I never want to let this go. And so it's just sort of a love letter to punk rock. And then, like, Hate Season itself, the title track is really about, whether it's politics or whether it's like scene politics, it's about, the hate that's out there. It is a little bit about, the folks that are around you and love you when they can benefit from it or ride a coattail or whatever the case may be. But then, the minute you step away from that and you might be in a position of need or whatever, there's no one to be found. So I would say the entire record was probably inspired by the trials and tribulations, personal stuff that I faced just with like mental health stuff during that period, the political stuff, and then, the missing the music. So yeah, the entire thing I think is really an ode to that period.
Awesome. You kind of just like led into my next question, which was mental health, because it was like a reoccurring theme in this entire album. So has making this record or the process of making this record actually tried like helped you mentally? Like ha was it a healing process in a way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, one of the working titles for this record for a while was Healing Era, but then, at the end of the day, we felt they didn't do the record justice. But, that songwriting period and these songs that came out of that, really was being able to finally like catch a breath and look back on, the previous 5 years or so and be able to process some of that stuff, I do the therapy, encourage people to go to therapy, but sometimes it's not enough. And for me, like CBT traditionally has not really been successful, but the songwriting process ends up being its own form of a tool, when I hit a couple of chords and it inspires a feeling in me and it brings back a memory, like, those are kind of how Scarborough songs are born. Like, I don't really set out with a particular theme or idea in mind. I kind of let the music and the mood that it sets in me kind of guide where that's going to go. So it certainly it was very therapeutic, and you get to say a lot of the things that you don't get to say in certain spaces, especially like when you're working in politics, you're doing a lot of biting of the tongue, for better or for worse. And so to be able to just again be able to speak freely and kind of process all of that stuff, it certainly was a very therapeutic process.
I also go to therapy, and I tell my therapist all the time, it's on me to work on me. I was like, my therapist is not the one that's gonna ever fix me. So it's funny to hear that, like, well, I guess it's not funny. It's actually good to hear that like other people have different methods of going through it and figuring out. So is there a song on this record that broke you when it came to writing it, where you're just like, you know, this worked out like mentally, like a lot of things. 'Cause I do know that like sometimes I'll listen to songs and it will like touch a part of my brain that I did not even realize was there, and a memory comes up and I'm just bawling.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny that you say that because when we were doing the record release show, we played this song 10,000 Miles live, and I think it might have been one of the first times we ever played it live, but I don't know, you know, and it's one of the shortest songs lyrically, but it really captures the whole spirit of everything I had kind of gone through, which is, you know, if I had to do all of this hardship ever again, would I do it? And it's like, yeah, you know, because there were lessons in that. And like, you know, when we were in the studio, like you know, I really wanted to throw strings on there, wanted to throw piano on there, and it made it like, you know, this little breakdown part, which was like a kind of like an emotional thing. But I don't know why it was doing it live where it was just kind of a little bit raw and we didn't have like the pianos and all that other bullshit in there. Then it just hit me and I had to like catch myself and like turn away from the audience for a second. 'Cause like, one, I don't cry. Not that it's like anything wrong against it. It's just like I physically have not been able to cry in like a year. Like the last time I cried was when my dog died last May. And so yeah, you know, here I was in a record release show and we hit that breakdown and I just choked me the fuck up. I don't know. And it just that moment, you know, like what the song was about, just that we were even on that fucking stage in the first place. And it was just like, I don't know, having friends and family there, it just really it really struck a note and it really felt like, damn, that was a long period of hardship, and like, aren't we lucky to be here? You know, because there were some really dark moments along the way where you don't always know that you're gonna make it out of it. But you know, thankfully I did. Knock
Awesome.
on.
So you also released a song, Sin Futuro. It's a song, the first time you guys have done a song in Spanish. So is this something that you guys are looking forward to doing more of in the future?
Maybe. I mean, I think if the song calls for it, it'll happen. It was, you know, it was interesting. You know, I've been bilingual, you know, obviously my entire life, but then I don't know why I'd never, you know, written in Spanish before, but like you know, it really lent itself to the idea of the song, so it just kind of worked. You know, that's the trick with Scarborough is that we don't really plan the song so much. So it's, you know, it really depends on what sort of the universe calls for at the time. You know, what the download brings, but I'd love to do it because it was a ton of fun, you know, and it's always fun forcing Jack to learn Spanish.
Make Jack bilingual, please. So since the album's been out, pretty much you guys have been going full force into like everything, especially since you took a hiatus right before this. I was like, how are you holding up? Like, you're everywhere. You're touring the West Coast, you're at Camp Punk's. Like, come on.
I mean, it's been a blast. Like right now, we're finally taking a breath for the next month or two, just to like, 'cause like, you know, like for us, we've been working on this record for 2 years. Like I know it just came out in April, but like, you know, like the world doesn't get to see all of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, and there's just like so much. You know, we were, you know, doing a bunch of like regional dates too, just to like get out of the city and play as many shows as we could without killing ourselves. Like, you know, like you mentioned, we went out to the West Coast in February, which was like a total blast. We've been doing Camp Punk and we did Punk Island last year too. So it's felt like a nonstop sort of freight train for the past year and a half. So, you know, right now we're gonna catch our breath for a minute before we keep pushing out, because like, you know, we still have a few of the vinyl that we want to offload on the world, and you know, we're really excited to keep playing this record. But yeah, eternally grateful that we finally get a little bit, a modicum of a summer this summer, and let other folks, you know, burn the gas.
Awesome. Yeah, I think I'm good. You good?
I'm fantastic.
Awesome. So we're gonna play a song. I'm gonna play Turn It Up, and we'll be right back.
Yeah.
Okay. okay, so we're gonna run through some news because that's what we do at Punk News. We love news, apparently, and we love opinions and all that good stuff. So yeah. It was actually funny that I went to Toronto weekends ago because we Em and I, when I found her on the street, was actually talking about this venue, Sneaky D's. So Toronto-based pop punk band Try This At Home released a song called Save Sneaky D's, and it is a cute little number, I would have to say, pretty much like trying to prevent the restaurant venue from becoming condos, which I think is a very telling thing. Especially for me and John, since we live in big cities and we're always losing these like smaller or mid-tier venues. So yeah, and it's just very coincidence that I was talking about it, and it's an even bigger coincidence that there was an update on July 3rd. Woo! Yeah, so Sam gets back into the States and things happen after Sam drives by CKD's with M in said car. Apparently, the Goldberg Group, which is, I guess, the firm that was trying to make the spot where CKD's is because they own the land there, right? M, you could correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, they're the developers.
Yes. They officially withdrew their zoning application for the land. So, CKD's, we'll see another day for now. It is, I guess, not certain what's going to happen because essentially the land still is owned by someone else or by the developers. So, yeah. Em, I'm going to pivot to you. Takes on this? The
We
song?
saved Sneaky D's. this was something that like came up a couple months ago where there were a lot of videos on my feed, and it was like, oh, well, we're gonna lose like this heritage building and this spot because Sneaky D's has launched so many bands like Pup and like just countless others,
The
Bare Naked Ladies. Yeah, exactly. Like there's so many like amazing bands. It's in a lot of like Toronto kind of classic stuff. Like it's in Scott Pilgrim. It plays a lot of roles in different things. And it's been in the same family for over 40 years. So like, to kind of see the community really come out and be like, no, like you're gonna stop this. Like you're not gonna do this, like all this kind of stuff. It's always the people against the like corporation, and you're like, oh shit, like what are we doing here? But everyone like stood their ground, did their thing, and this has been moved on, which is great. And the reason why they dropped their zoning thing was because so the development group owns the land on Sneaky D's, but they don't own the whole kind of corner. So RBC, which is a bank, they were like, yeah, no, you're not developing us. So you don't own our land. And that's essentially what caused them to drop the thing, which was great. So now what they're looking into is to get heritage designation. So no matter who owns the land, that building stays, and that kind of community kind of stays with it. So hopefully that is something that happens. And I don't think people are going to stop like talking about it, because like in Toronto too, there's been a lot of venues that have been either priced out, or they've been bought by Live Nation, or there's been a lot of like legal shit or condo development again. And it's always like the condos that are like millions of dollars, no one can afford them. So yeah, I thought the song was fun. It was really like, it was really short, but catchy and everything. And so it's Try This At Home, Winter Mute, and Megan, and they're all from Toronto, and they all came together to do this. So I think it's really good to see.
Awesome. John, what's your
Yeah.
take on this? And what are you seeing the same trend as I'm seeing with like venues just disappearing?
No, I'm seeing lots of independent venues sprout up, and Live Nation really shrinking back and saying, you know what, you guys deserve to exist, and we don't ex deserve to exist, and we're Live Nation, and we've made enough money, and we don't need to really make any more money. No, of course, I am furious at the trend and concerned about Live Nation doing all sort of ma this exact issue here is not a Live Nation issue. It's a real estate issue. This exact thing, of course, is a big deal right now in many cities, including San Francisco. The Parkside and Bottom of the Hill are both closing up. Two longstanding, famous, great punk venues are closing up, and there's going to be condos there now going forward, which is a real bummer. So yes, I've seen that trend. I think probably Canada, Sam, is probably kind of more like Europe in that there's ways to combat that more than in America. In America, it seems there's really no real ways to combat that issue. And I don't know if there in America if there is a way to combat that issue. I mean, you can maybe name some places, historical sites, but even in America, like even if a place is designated historical, the developers will often find a way around to just wreck it and, you know, go over it, you know. And so I'm trying not to be doom and gloom here. A, I think it's cool that everyone bands together and saves Sneaky D's. Was everyone banding together, or was it the bank? Is the success of Sneaky D's just collateral to the bank fighting back, or was there actually a victory for Sneaky D's by itself?
There is a victory with like everyone kind of rallying around the okay, venue.
That's cool. I don't know if Canadian developers are like American developers, but if they were like American developers, they're definitely finding a way to get around it. But I think it's quite. But on the other hand, the more resistance you give, the more likely they are to find a target somewhere else rather than have a headache here. So I think this is cool. I think this is good. I think American venues and people and citizens need to take notice of this and do the same. Will they? I'm 50-50.
Sure. What is your take? And also, do you miss St. Vitus as much as I miss St. Vitus?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But the good news is it's coming back.
Yes.
You know, Bushwick, but, you know, it's better than nothing. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that this is like, you know, I think the main takeaway is that it's just cool to see music actually, you know, organize in a way. So like, I think like, you know, that and, you know, I'm a lover of short songs. So like just on the musical side of it, it's just like, you know, just classic, perfect sort of pop punk. That just gets, you know, the message across short and sweetly. But yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's just like super rad just to see that music can still move people into actual action. So like, to me, that was just kind of the more important piece of it.
This is a genuine question. Isn't St. Vitus kind of its own fault though? Like, didn't St. Vitus not have proper licensing codes and that or licensing permits, and that's why they got shut down? Like, it wasn't even anyone chasing them out. It was just them kind of being lazy after 10 years of still not having up-to-date inspections.
Well, it was St. Vitus is twofold. It is definitely the fact that they didn't have the proper documentation that they need in New York City. So there's one. And then two, there was also annoying people consistently calling on the venue for various reasons.
See, that actually, I'm not saying that it was, but well, certain large promoters, could be any promoter, mm-hmm. at least in Philadelphia, specifically did take targeted action in having, quote, citizens call in on smaller venues and have them shut down. And it was clearly a targeted attack by a large promoter. But that being said, I don't have a whole – I mean, St. Buddy's was a cool venue, but I have a whole lot of sympathy for them because they had 10 years to get permits and they just didn't. You know what I mean? If they had permits, they could have – now, getting permits in the city, that's a whole other can of worms. There's issue of corruption. There's people dragging their behinds. I've worked through some of that stuff firsthand. It is brutal. But that being said, if you're going to have a music venue, you probably should be up to date because the fact of the matter is licensing and permits really are for the safety of the people going to the venue. You know what I mean? So it is important. And so, you know, like I said, I think St. Vitus is a slightly different issue than Sneaky D's and the Parkside and Bottom of the Hill. And they just didn't have permits. And if they had permits and licensing and inspections, then they wouldn't have gotten shut down. So I don't really – I mean, I'm sad about it. Not that sad. I'm a little sad. But I think they could have done a better job at protecting themselves in that area.
Yeah, well, my funny thing about what has happened with St. Vitus is essentially they have taken – so they're moving. Gunther has told us they're moving. Thank you, the mannequin. Death metal mannequin. But they're moving to an actual, like, existing venue that used to exist called Brooklyn Made. So Brooklyn Made shut down with some legal battles that happened, I think last year. Also, I think Brooklyn Maid may have been owned at some point by Live Nation. Someone can email me angrily if I am wrong. But it's kind of like funny that that is happening right now. I was like, hey, I'm so for having another venue that will cater to punk, hardcore, and metal, right? Because that's what St. Vitus was for us. I almost feel like I lived there for a while, like literally probably lived in the basement because I was there every weekend. But yeah. Small venues. We need them back, please. Organize. Make sure
And ones
these.
with like really good nachos.
Yes, oh my God. So the one time I went to Sneaky D's was another, the last time I was at Toronto, besides this last time where I found an M on the streets and we looked at dogs in a fountain, was
And one
because,
cat.
and one cat, yes, was because we were heading to Sneaky D's to go see the Full Blast play Sneaky's. And yes, those nachos are damn delicious. So save the nachos if anything. Okay, so another thing that has happened recently, which I guess I have my feelings about it, but whatever. America has turned 250 years old, and our fearless leader here has announced a concert a while back called Freedom 250. So,
By Felix, you mean Freddy Cat scared bitch that always backs down despite barking? Is that what you mean by Felix, Sam?
I think they already know my sarcasm. So, anyways, so this Freedom 250 is part of the Great American State Fair that was happening at the National Mall, which apparently has been plagued with a whole bunch of issues, this Great American State Fair. So the original lineup was supposed to be Martina McBride, Young MC, CNC Music Factory, Vanilla Ice, Milli Vanilli, The Commodores, Morse Day, and The Time, Flo Rida, and Bret Michaels, right? So when this was announced, about 7 of the 9 people dropped out. Pretty much saying that they were misled into the purposes of this event. So pretty much the only person that was left really was Vanilla Ice. He remained, and apparently it was supposed to happen, but a severe weather storm took it out. So it was canceled. It is, so Sam's opinion on this is karma. Karma took it. I actually have a lot of feelings about this because it's one part of a Great American State Fair when DC is not even a state. They don't even have representation in this land. So it's almost ridiculous to have a state fair in a place, and this is just me being technical, right? In a place that is not really a state. And two, want like this, I from what I have seen, whatever happened at the state fair was not as grand as what they think we're supposed to believe. So, yes, karma took it out, and I'm glad it did. John, what's your take on this?
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings on this. The first thing is, I mean, if there ever was a better metaphor for the current administration, then I haven't seen it. It just goes to show how inept and out of touch with American needs they are. In that, like this lineup is like not even the county fair lineup. I worked at a medium-sized but kind of powerful law firm 2 jobs ago, and every summer we would have a kind of a cool party where we would have Eddie Money Come Play or Three Dog Night or The Lovin' Spoonful or kind of county fair acts. And I think it's hilarious that the United States, ostensibly the most richest and most powerful country, I mean, yeah, country in the world, Can't even get like a county foot. Like you would think they'd have like, I don't know, Taylor Swift and Bruce Springsteen or something. And they've got Milli Vanilli, an act that doesn't even sing. Not
Wait,
only, they're not only singing their own songs.
John, Taylor Swift was very busy that weekend.
Well, that's true. She was getting married. She was somewhere better. But like Milli Vanilli, an act that doesn't, not only doesn't even sing their own songs, they don't even sing, you know, which is like this lineup is bizarre. It's like it goes to show that they're so inept that they don't even know how to hire the right people, that they just hire their friends they think maybe can do something. Like whoever booked this clearly has no idea how to book a concert, clearly has no idea how to make a draw. And why are we hiring like $3,000 acts for America's 250th birthday, you know? And so I think it's a great metaphor that way. I think it's clear that it, you know, crumbled from the onset. And it just goes to show that they lied to people about what it would be. I think it's a pretty bad look for Vanilla Ice to say, "Oh, I'm still going to do it," you know, because you know Vanilla Ice sucks. And so I think this is a disgrace and a shame. And it just goes to show that even God hates. Well, I know he hates, but even God is opposed to this stupid event. You know what I mean? He's like, "I'm just going to make it rain and ruin the event." It just goes to show how inept they are at in every avenue, from civics to criminal justice. To throwing a, they can't even throw a show. Like 16-year-olds can throw shows in basements. They say, "Hey, you know, Suicide Machines, you want to come play my show? I'll pay you $800." And Suicide Machines like, "Okay, can you get a PA?" And the 16-year-old asks his older brother, "Can you get me a PA?" And it's like, "Okay, fine." Like a 16-year-old is more adequate to this kind of thing than the current federal administration, which is bizarre but also clear. And also it's shocking to me that people aren't really, this is yet another example of how terrible at everything the federal government is, particularly Trump and his cronies, and that people kind of aren't marching in the streets and rioting in furor and anger, because this is, I mean, this is bad, you know. And so anyway, Trump sucks, this sucks. It's hilarious that it fell apart, but also annoying. And lastly, I would say, what was my, I had a final point. What was it? My final point was, damn, I forgot my final point. Sam, what was my final point that I was going to make?
This sucks.
This does suck. Oh, I know. I'm really mad at Trump because, listen, man, it's America's 250th birthday within our governmental system, but the country in of itself, the tenets of the Constitution are wonderful, unique, and very important. And there's no perfect government, but the Constitution. So we should be partying, having fun, and getting down to Taylor Swift. Or I would even accept the Foo Fighters. I can't stand your Foo Fighters. If they were like the Foo Fighters, it's America. Anyone other than Trump is president. The Foo Fighters are playing. I'd be like, "Yeah, America, yeah." And instead of everyone having fun at the 25th anniversary of America, we've got this shitty show. We've got Vanilla Ice headlining a shitty show with Trump there. And listen, I'm mad at Trump for ruining the 250th anniversary of America. We're at a point where we have to be ashamed and embarrassed to the world rather than celebrating and say, "Look how great we are." And so we got problems, Sam, and we need to fix these problems, Sam. I hope these problems get fixed, and I hope Americans are smart enough and don't have too much power taken away from them by the next election to change things, the many things that need to be changed.
Sure. You. So what is your take on this? And can you change things for us?
Look, all right. First of all, I semi-related. I remember when I was in college, we had a little Chick-fil-A kind of food court area, and they'd always do free concerts there. And they were doing a concert one night, and I had gone early while they were still setting up, and I wasn't paying attention where I was walking, and I just like rail into this dude in a hoodie, and he turns around, and it's Vanilla Ice, because it's Vanilla Ice is when he was doing that like hardcore thing, you know, like when he was trying to have. So that's my Vanilla Ice story. You know, I don't have such a rosy view on the American project. You know, not I don't want to start a political debate, but you know, as far as look, things getting changed. You know, I know that everybody wants to be hopeful and everybody has their eyes set on those midterm elections. But you know, from someone who has worked on the inside of both the federal and the state level, you know, the corporate capture of our institutions are pretty far flung. You know, I think Having Zoran as mayor is great, but we have a fascism problem at the federal level. So this great constitution that we have is constantly being violated day in and day out, and the vast majority of people are continuing on with their fucking lives. Fourth of July weekend. Meanwhile, in Delaney Hall, we have folks that are literally in a fucking concentration camp. So I am hard pressed to see. I mean, Alex Pretty, Nicole Good, right? Like, here we have the extrajudicial killing of American citizens by the state, and we're moving on to the next thing. And the thing that people don't understand is that the minute that you take a constitutional precedent or take a constitutional protection and it is abrogated for one particular person or one group of people, and there is no outcry and no taking to the street and no pushing on the levers of power, and just waiting that hopefully the next election is going to take care of it, when the other, quote unquote opposition party, is main strategy has been like, let's just let this guy fuck everything up as bad as possible, and then we're going to win elections, because they're more interested in winning elections than what to do when they actually have power, what types of policies can actually be implemented to change things that are the other. So look, I could go on forever, so I don't want to shit on the parade here. So yeah, boo America, Freedom 250 concert, and Buck Vanilla Ice and Milli Vanilli. Oh, Milli Vanilli, at least they canceled. So Flo Rida, on the other hand, I think he actually performed. So boo Flo
Oh boy.
Rida.
From a Canadian's perspective, what is your take on
Yes.
Freedom 250? Do you even like the title Freedom 250 for something like this? Yeah, and you have a Vanilla Ice story.
Well, yeah, like it was funny, because when we were in Toronto and stuff, and you were like, oh yeah, well, it's not even a state, and I was like, what? So that was kind of new. It was interesting to see how that was a thing. Freedom 250, it sounds silly. I don't like the name. And yeah, like, it's also kind of like, are you really free? Do you have freedom? What does freedom mean? Has freedom just been co-opted by, this regime kind of deal? So it's like a Ford F-150, like, that's what it makes me think of with it. I want to know more about the algae, because I know, like, someone like dumped algae in the pool or something, and that's something I've been meaning to like look into. But anyway, I think it's really funny that you announce this thing that's supposed to be for everybody and like whatever, and everybody drops, or not everybody, but most people drop off like immediately, and they're like, yeah, no, I don't want to be associated with this. And it's like, well, what were you pitched? What made you sign on in the first place? Did you sign on? Was it your publicist that thought it was a good idea? Like, what kind of went on there? And I think having it be canceled by like weather is kind of like a twofold sort of thing. It's like, it's being canceled by weather, brought on by climate change because of policies and like different things, and it's like the same thing happened with the Canada like Day thing in Ottawa. It was like it stormed so bad and like everything like that, and it's like, yeah, well, we need to kind of deal with that too, right? Instead of because it's just going to happen more and more. Like, we've had so much trees and stuff go down. But anyway, it's besides the point. Yeah, that's my thing. I think. I'm surprised nothing was hit by lightning.
Sam,
Cut.
correct me if I'm wrong. With the pool, no one dumped algae in the pool. It just was very poorly done, and that caused algae to grow.
Oh,
And then Trump said,
okay.
"Oh, someone ambushed our pool."
No.
And that was, I mean, that's actually pretty freaky to me, because that's almost like Mao, like that's almost like Chairman Z or Kim Jong-un or whatever. Like, oh, we'll just straight up make a lie to cover our total ineptitude. You know what I mean? Like, that's like freaky.
And
Like,
there's that
no.
Olympian that's facing 10 years in prison because they're accusing him of cutting the tarp underneath the reflecting pool. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That
Ooh, yeah.
right, exactly. Yeah, so
Well, the other thing is, I was like, we're dealing with science here, right? With the algae. I was like, if sun shines on a pool of water or a fish tank of sorts, there's things living in this pool. Ducks, they're pooping in it, definitely. So there's going to be things, microorganisms growing out of it. And algae will form. It pretty much means that you need to upkeep the things in order to make things nice still. And the other thing is, whatever they painted was peeling off anyways. So whatever they did wasn't good enough. It's wild. It's wild. DC is wild right now. I can't. Well, we're going from something really not cool to something I think is cool. So Scowl released a remix EP. It's called "Are We All Angels Remixes?" Pretty much remixes of an album, right? That they just re released recently. So it's pretty much three tracks by the Sextiles, Machine Girl, and Model Atrice. Is that how you say that? Yeah, I think these remixes are quite good, especially since they did remixes for a Psychic Dance Routine before, and I really like that. I did find it a little strange that they did two versions of what is it? Of Special.
Special.
Yeah, which kind of like I Sam would have liked another song and not two versions of the same song? Isn't that what you do when you do compilations and stuff? So you all pick different songs. But yeah, I particularly really like Machine Girl Remix. I find it more dancey than techno, and that's just my preference because I rather not techno and go to a club and get a headache. So M, what is your take on these remixes?
Yeah, I thought they were really good. Like same thing, I found them all a lot more dancey. I was surprised that they did two remixes of Special. Like I like that song. I like the remixes of it. But it would have been cool to hear one of them do a different song off of like the album and kind of get a different sort of vibe. But maybe that's one that has like the best stems to work with at the same time. I really liked the Sextile remix of Babe. I thought that was really cool. And yeah, like the Machine Girl one's just like nuts. So if they released a full album where each track of the album was remixed, like I'd be very into that. But they've had like such good collaborations for remixes, with the Psychic Dance Routine ones and then with what they did with the Devo one. Like it, yeah, it's just great. Big fan.
It is great. Sure. What is your take on these remixes?
Yeah. I'm a big fan. Like I love when they do the remixes and it really goes outside of sort of what you expect, especially for them as a band. I would say I rather than two Special remixes, if they would have done the whole record, that would have been really cool. I hope that like maybe they'll have some other remixes, but I love Scowl all the way around and everything they do, and these remixes fall in line just with that, so.
Well, it's also funny that these remixes come out, especially when they're kind of on hiatus or something, or
Yeah.
yeah, like that's kind of a thing. Like, what are we doing here with this? Plus, I also do think that these remixes would sound great on Taco Bell commercials because that's already been done. So, John, is any of these remixes going to show up to any of the record freakouts that you have? And what is your
Well,
take on this?
the Psychic Dance Routine remix by New Testament or Nuevo Testamento, that might be my all-time favorite remix ever. I think that remix is like insanely good. I've been cranking that on the regular since it came out. I wish they made a 12-inch single of it. That dance remix, I mean, it's funny, as many genres of punk there are about seven times more genres of dance music. My one friend was real, or is really into dance music, and he's like, there's EBM, there's house techno, there's deep dub, there's all these, and to me, they all sound the same pretty much. But what I would say is that The Psychic Dance Routine remix to me was a very dancey remix. Like I'm like, yes, that's what dance music is. To me, I want to call this acid house, but I have no idea if that's what acid house actually sounds like, you know? And I've heard Machine, like the Machine, I've seen Machine Girl live. I was going to open for The Garden. And to me, these are like, I guess, too intense or too dancey or too noisy for dance for me, you know? And that like the Machine Girl track and the other tracks almost sound industrial to me, you know? And so I really like the Psychic Dance Routine remix. These, I guess, are maybe, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know a whole lot about modern dance, but to me, these are two, you know, one of the songs has that beat that I hate. That's, you know, it's like, I hate that beat. And that gets in, that's in like, but that's on me. That's in like 80% of dance music now. I absolutely hate that beat. It annoys me. So I would say that these really are not for me. I love ska. I'm all about ska being remixed. And I think Cat Moss ought to do a straight up dance album or something like Gwen Stefani's first solo record and that kind of a dance record. I really think, you know, if she did something with beats along the lines of Psychic Dance Routine, maybe a little bit of rock, maybe a couple ballads, but mostly like dance or pop dance, I guess, I think she could make the album of the year. So that's what I would like to hear.
I do love the fact that they mix like the techno dance with her growling in spaces. It's to a normal person that goes to the club, I don't know if they're going to realize that she's like screaming into the mic, but you know, for I guess us that's followed Scowl for a while, like, you know, she does growl, and I was like, and I enjoy it so much. Okay, so I think we are going to, yeah.
What I was saying is, like, who do you think is bigger, Machine Girl or Scowl?
I don't know, because I don't really know Machine Girl. I was like, you
right.
know.
I think Machine Girl.
Machine Girl is probably way, but let's take a quick look. I'm pretty sure Machine Girl is way bigger than Scowl because they saw that Union Transfer. Let's see here. Actually, well, maybe not. Let's take a look here. So it's interesting that like bigger acts are remixing. Machine Girl is about twice as big as Scowl. So it's interesting that, and I'm not sure if there's something to take note from this or not, in that like Scowl is in, I love Scowl. Scowl's in magazines. They're covered by websites. They're even played on college radio. Meanwhile, Machine Girl is not really covered by that many publications. They're not played on maybe some obscure college radio or some kid late at night. But we're in this world now, and I'm not even saying it's a bad thing, where like acts are huge and they get like, quote, no press or coverage, and it's all strictly social media and the band's own social media. So we're in this kind of weird world where, or I don't know if it's weird is the right word, but we're in this new dynamic, this new paradigm, if you will, Sam, where like coverage and general consensus is no way to gauge it about how big a band is, and that it's like almost ultimate DIY, and that a band can be massive. Machine Girl, not that Machine Girl is massive, but Machine Girl is making bank. They're making definitely livable bank. Yet they're not in any magazine. You see, where Scowl, who was in all the magazines, and I love Scowl, isn't as big as Machine Girl, which I find is an interesting dynamic. And I still haven't fully grasped it and understood its import, frankly. If I look to see who's playing Union Transfer in Philadelphia, which is the medium size independent, no, it's the large size independent venue. I look at it, I'm like, I don't know half these bands. And these bands are like way bigger than any punk band except for like Green Day. You know, I mean, we talk about Social Distortion. There's bands playing Union Transfer right now that none of us have ever heard of that are way bigger than Social Distortion. And not that I'm a Social Distortion fan, because I'm not, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, I think that's the thing. It's like the culture that we have here because of the internet and mass media is shifting the dynamics and how we like live, right? I was like, most of us have some kind of like AI device, right? That where we're telling them, do this for me, like turn on a lamp or whatever.
I hate that stuff, Sam. I hate that stuff. I don't have any of that stuff.
Okay, well, you don't. But like, you know, but we all kind of have like phones or rely on phones, and like, you know, most of us have social media. And you know, the good thing about social media is social media, like a band could post something and it goes directly to their fans if the algorithm lets them, that is. And you know, and the which cuts out the middle people because, like, you know, a part of, I guess, our existence in punk news, right? Back in the day, in order to find out information about bands, a lot of people would log into punk news and read it like religiously. Like, that's literally what my husband says all the time. I was like, I used to read punk news every day, like, you know, to find out, like, you know, tours and stuff like that, to go see bands. So, like, you know, our just punk news in general, this dynamic has changed and shifted, hence why we do podcasts and stuff. But yeah, like it's a little wild. Sure, you're in a band. Tell me.
Yeah, it's a fucking nightmare. Well, like the social media aspect, I mean, because everything has become an algorithm sort of thing, you know, it's like if in, you know, you post something and if there is an engagement in like the first 10, 15 minutes, you know, the level of people that are going to see that, you know, shrinks, which is like whatever, you know, it's part of the landscape. You for a band like us that, you know, is just out there and playing and still also relies on word of mouth, like it's not the end of the world, but like, you know, to John's point, like there's just so much out there. There's the, you know, everything has been nichified. And so like music discovery really is, it has become a lot harder. And I don't think social media makes it any easier. I think it does make it harder because you're only getting fed sort of your stuff. And there's like, you know, when I look at like what my kids are listening to, you know, and how they're discovering music, it's completely different. And they're just on a completely different track. And, you know, it's, you have artists that are, you know, sort of huge that you've never heard of before. And that's, you know, like we don't really have much of a monoculture anymore. And I think that, you know, social media has really helped drive that wedge. And I think it does make it harder for emerging smaller artists, because like, you know, there's a ton of competition, but on top of the competition, it's that you're not going to be seen or heard by people outside of your immediate, you know, sort of algorithmic circle, which is kind of a bummer. So I don't know. It's, you know, I think it's something that we're all learning to adapt to in the modern era. But yeah, you know, it is kind of nuts when you see like these huge artists that, you know, aren't getting coverage but are making bank, and then you have, you know, bands that are out there like, you know, playing, you know, months in and months out, and getting as much coverage that they possibly can, and active on socials and whatever, and, you know, don't seem to reach the same height. So like, you know, who knows?
It sucks. You're youth. You're younger. Like, how are you adapting to social media and all of this?
I have had social media since, well, like it's always, not always kind of existed, but like when Instagram was like just an app, like I downloaded it not too long after it was like, and that was all on school Wi-Fi because I didn't have Wi-Fi at my house. So it was like, you know, that. So it's always existed in some way. I have a, I don't know. That's something I've been trying to kind of like sit and really give space for is like my relationship with social media because I used to use it a lot more than I do. And I still use it like a lot because I'm in a very like rural area and that's one of the only ways I have connection is like through social media, is through whatever. Because, you know, if, you know, I want to talk to somebody who lives somewhere farther away. They might ha not have a cell phone. They might only use the internet because it's cheaper. Like, there's all of these other things for communication and connection. So I try to use social media more that way. But again, in the same thing, like it's I write and I do stuff like that, and I want people to see it, and I want to like get the word out about bands or, you know, whatever, like something that I spent a long time on and I'm proud of. And then, you know, sometimes that gets everywhere, sometimes it doesn't, and it just depends. And then sometimes the people that need to find it, and sometimes the people that need to find it don't find it. And then it's just kind of this weird sort of like soup, and it's distant or not distancing, but it's realizing who you are in social media and then realizing who you are in real life, and kind of the social media isn't real life kind of thing. It's like I've definitely like fallen into that and whatever. And I think people have a really inflated view of each other in one way, where it's like, oh, well, you know, you're constantly accessible, which is good in one way, but then it's also not good in the other way because it's like, please don't message me on this about this thing or, whatever. So I have a love-hate relationship with it. I hate all the AI stuff where you can't opt out of it in a lot of situations. Like with the Instagram search bar, it's all AI, which I think is bullshit. But I recently got Reddit. Yeah, that was an interesting thing. I use it to look at cat pictures. That's pretty much my whole feed.
Reddit is a wormhole of interesting.
Oh yeah.
Except the
Except with
Yeah, my little
cats.
bubble of cats. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, I don't know. I think we're all still trying to figure out and navigate the internet. I think
Yeah.
we're
Well,
doing
because it's tough.
okay.
Because remember, like back in the day,
Yeah.
right? Like you could just post like you were gonna, your show, or you could just post whatever. But like now, like especially like something like Instagram, right? Like it has to be entertainment. And so, like one of the things that's so weird to watch, and like I don't knock it at all. Like congrats, like I props to anyone who's putting in that hustle. But like I'm watching some bands where it's like, this has nothing to do with your music. Like your music's not even on your damn thing. You're just doing skits. Like, congrats on the engagement, but like that's hard, you know? And I know that there are some influencers that'll be like, oh, like every band used to have to do things they didn't want to do for promotion. Like, they'd have to sit through like 18 magazine interviews a day. And I'm like, I'd rather do that than have to like perform for a fucking reel. You know, it's just like, it sucks because it's like, Jack and Ronica, they're both younger than me, and I'm like, yo, like, and even they're even probably more social media averse than I am. So I have no one to push off the like, can, because I won't do it, you know? Like I realize, and I know it's gonna hurt us in the long term, like promotionally, but like, at what point do you start becoming, have to become a social media influencer in order to, like none of us signed up for this. We're like a fucking DIY punk band. Like we can do our own posters, we can do our own pictures. Like we have to draw the line somewhere.
Well, with social media, it's like, what is reality, right? I was like, my take on social media, at least with my personal social media, is I was like, I only show what I want you to see, and if I want to be vulnerable, because I don't make music, then I'll say it. But a lot of people, like, will go through the motions of, oh my God, this person's not doing well, and then something happens, right? Oh, but their social media presence, they were always smiling, like things like that, which kind of goes back to the mental health thing. Like we were talking about before, it's really not a good gauge to like even figure out where we are, because like a lot of this is like curation in a lot of ways. And as a person that went to art school to try to curate things, I was like, I hate the word curate these days because it's just not real life anymore. Because real life is like literally dealing with shit and figuring it out. But yeah. Okay, so we have one last piece to discuss. So No Cure band. They released a video for a new song. The song is called Where the Spasms Cease. It's pretty much prob it's pro it's coming out on an album called It's Going to Get Dark, which is going to be out in a couple days actually via Sharp Tone Records. The music video is really interesting to me because literally it is complete opposite of like what they sound like, to me at least. So M, tell me about them.
Speaking of social media, this is a band I found out about on social media. So that was cool. But yeah, oh, what was it? It was for their the album announcement, actually, I think is what it was, and their first single. I listened to and I was like, oh, this is sick. Like, this is so good, because I love this style of music, and it's like a comfort blanket almost. So I've been listening to a lot of like bands in that umbrella. So always to have more of that is great. I love this song. It's really, really like brutal and like aggressive and great. And then when you listen to the lyrics, it's like a whole other thing. But anyway, Yeah, and then with the video, it's like kind of like they're trying to make like the monotony and kind of like the bullshit be like funny and bright, and then kind of pointing out the subliminal messaging that like the monotony is supposed to enforce, and then not do it, like not falling for it, right? And it's like, I'm gonna just keep going. I'm gonna ignore that and keep doing my thing. So, yeah, I'm really excited for this album. I think it's gonna be great. And yeah, excited to hear thoughts.
Sure. What is your take? Do you even like this?
Yeah, no, yeah. It's the first time I ever heard them, but it goes super hard, and I love the way that the video really subverts expectations. So I'm kind of stoked to check out this record, and this is why doing stuff like this is like still so important, because you get to find music you wouldn't have been able to find otherwise. So I'm really glad that punk news still exists.
Yeah, we're trucking along.
Hell yeah.
John and I. John, what is your take on
27
the
years, Sam. 27 years plus two more as Sounds of Revolution. 27 years, Sam. 27 years.
Wait, so what's gonna happen when we turn 30?
Festival.
We're throwing America 253. That's what we're doing. We turn America 253. We're gonna have Scarborough there. We're gonna have let me think who the Thompson Twins. We're gonna have let me think who else. Oh, Len, remember Len? Don't Steal My Sunshine. Scarborough's gonna headline. That's what's gonna happen. It's gonna be America 253, Punk News 30, and it's gonna be great. And we're gonna install a pool that actually works, and we're gonna undo all the psychological damage and the disheartening damage that was done by America 250, the worst scheduled. Here's what we're gonna do, Sam. Scarborough's gonna headline America 253, and we're gonna have a bunch of one-hit wonders that are actually super good, you see. Like Glenn, you see. And that's what it's gonna be. And Scarborough is not a one-hit wonder. They've been around 10 years. They are a multi-hit wonder, but that's why they're gonna headline. It's gonna be great.
Amazing.
Am for this, Sean. Make it happen. And you could do it in Philly, you
We'll do
know?
it in Philly. We'll do
Philly
it right
is
on the
so
waterfront there.
historic. Yes.
That doesn't get more historic than Philadelphia, that's for sure. So we'll have it right across from the Liberty Bell. We'll have the mayor come on down. Maybe we'll have a hot dog eating contest or something. It'll be a good time,
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
Eating contests actually, I hate eating contests. Like, I hate that. It grossed me out. I really hate seeing that. I really do.
It's really gross. I cannot watch the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. It's just really gross when they dunk the buns in water.
Ah,
Like, I'm like, ew.
here's what we're gonna do, Sam. We're gonna have a hot dog enjoying contest, and much like figure skating, people will rate like hot dog eaters on how much they enjoy eating one hot dog. You see, one hot dog, and you get rated on how much you enjoy it. That as opposed to, see, we're about refinement and enjoying things, not gluttony and speed, Sam. That's the difference.
I'm all for this, and I think we need to do a Len air guitar off.
I agree, but Sam, what happens when our hot dog enjoyment contest becomes somewhat lascivious and suggestive? Do we embrace that, or do we shut off and say, no, this is for the children?
Well, I think it should be all ages.
So no dirty hot dog eating. Only
Yeah.
PG rated
Yes, yes,
eating.
yes, yes. And I think we need to have like chairs, like, actual like armchairs to sit in while we're eating said hot dogs. Because it does get a little like, not chaises. We don't need chaises and all that, because that's quite suggestive.
But we might need chases, because I'm gonna have wet leg perform at America 253.
Which is fine for the stage, not for the hot dog enjoyment contest.
Fair enough, fair enough.
You can't call it a hot dog enjoyment contest if you don't want it to be lascivious.
Well, we're closing this out with another track from Scarborough. We're gonna play Suicidal Babies. Sure, thank you for coming.
for having me.
And M, do we have any final words?
Practice safe hot dog enjoyment.
And see you next week.
Bye, y'all.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?